Our next guest is Steve Houston, partner at M Plus Funds. They offer a suite of unit investment trusts that fall under the defined outcome investing umbrella. And these funds actually get their exposure by holding options on broad-based ETFs. Steve is on the line with us from Darien, Connecticut. Steve, thanks for joining me this week.
Hey, great to be with you from Darien, Connecticut.
Well, Steve, before we get to the M Plus funds themselves, I noticed your firm has some really interesting ETF roots or tie-ins. So You actually received funding from Santana Growth Partners, who was an early investor in PowerShares. Of course, PowerShares is now Invesco and the fourth largest ETF provider. Your firm also had an investment from Third Stream Partners, who they were founded by former Barclays CEO Blake Grossman. And we all know Barclays created iShares, now the largest ETF provider. And not only that, you have two ETF industry pioneers on your advisory board. So Jennifer Grancio, who was a former founder and executive in BlackRock's iShares business, and then Jim Wyant, who founded ETF.com, who is actually a partner of this podcast. Is that all a big coincidence, or is there more to the story here?
Well, we're very blessed to have a good support team and bench like that. The background, I think, really for us is we bootstrapped this company and then we're looking for growth capital and found two great private equity investors. Santana Growth Partners, as you just mentioned, was behind some very successful ETF startups. They're just very plugged in the industry. They introduced us to Blake Grossman, who was the chairman and the founder of BGI iShares and was the vice chairman at BlackRock when they sold the business over there. They kind of looked at us as ETF 2.0. That was using their language, because they had seen the index world having been sliced and diced, you know, beyond belief, and there's an ETF for virtually everything. And yet what we were doing and what we are doing at M Plus Funds was just taking the core ETFs, things like Spiders and Qs and EFA, and customizing payoffs on those. And they thought that that was kind of a new development, an exciting development, and you know, we're thrilled to have them on board, as well as Jennifer and Jim, as you just mentioned. They've been tremendously helpful in opening doors and kind of getting us in front of the right people.
Okay, so let's get into some of the basics of the M Plus Funds lineup. Again, these aren't ETFs. I want to be clear about that. What exactly are these designed to do? Give us an example.
Yeah, sure. So we use the Unit Investment Trust chassis to provide our fund payoff. So these are registered 40 Act funds. Anybody can buy them. They're $10 units, but they're not listed on an exchange like a traditional ETF. What they do is they provide a defined outcome on an ETF. So we'll take, for instance, a fund that we just issued. It was a two-year fund. It has a payoff linked to Spiders, SPY, the benchmark S&P 500 ETF, and it provides a buffer on the downside if the market was to decline of 20% at the maturity date, which was 2 years. One participates on a one-to-one or 100% participation on the upside up to a capped amount. And so that fund right there is a good example of a way for somebody to remain long or to get long the market, but to have a good deal of insulation on the downside, you know, should we hit a decline in the market or a recession or something like that. And so advisors, fee-based advisors and clients directly will use our funds either to deploy excess cash to be in the market or to move out of long instruments to provide that kind of buffered downside protection.
And in terms of the options themselves, we talked about defined outcome ETFs earlier, and we can come back to that. But as I understand it, these hold flex options on those ETFs that you mentioned, correct? SPY, EFA, so on and so forth.
That's exactly right. And so very similar to defined outcome ETFs, there's only one asset that our funds hold, which are exchange-traded and listed flex options on SPY. And they're just very vanilla call options and put options. And because we're a 40 Act registered fund, you know, you have to disclose, you know, all of your holdings. And so our funds they're fixed. They're kind of set it and forget it style. So we deposit those options, calls and puts, into the fund on day one and essentially walk away. I mean, there's a 4 p.m. Net Asset Value NAV that's published every day that one can subscribe or redeem. But if you actually wanted to see the flex options, you could pull up our prospectus, turn to page 19 or whatever it is, and you'll actually see the itemized listed exchange-traded options that we have in there because they don't change. And so when we get subscriptions for more units, we just buy more of those flex options. When we get redemptions at 4 p.m. we just sell some of those exact, you know, flex options. And so very similar to what you'll see in the holdings, for instance, of an ETF.
A fund that stood out to me, and I could have this wrong, so we'll let you clarify, but it's the Enhanced Growth 150 Fund. And as I understand this, if that generates a positive price return at the end of the period, then an investor in this fund would receive a multiple of that return, maybe 1.5 times. If it's negative, then they would just experience the same loss as the underlying ETF. Do I have that correct?
You do. And it's. I'm glad you brought up that example, because it's our growth-oriented. We do capital preserved funds. We do buffered funds, which is the one I just described. And then we do these growth-oriented funds, which is the one you just mentioned. These are not levered ETFs. They're not two up, two down, three up, three down. They provide an enhanced capture on the upside, but one-to-one down, as if you owned the ETF outright. And so that payoff or that structure that you just described, it's actually been around for a long, long time. In fact, a lot of what you're seeing in defined outcome ETFs and in with M-plus funds has existed in other types of chassis, if you will. Structured notes or equity-linked notes was kind of the genesis of what you're seeing now, what we're seeing now with defined outcome funds. And structured notes have been around for 30 years. Indexed annuities, equity indexed annuities is another example. And some of those payoff profiles that you just described had existed in those chassis, but it's not a mainstream product. They're difficult to buy. They're just not for everybody. And so we kind of developed this defined outcome fund space about 4 years ago and chose the UIT chassis rather than the ETF chassis to provide those types of payoffs. And we did that because the UIT chassis is very, very, very flexible. We can issue funds for as small as like $3 million. So we actually customize funds for clients and for registered investment advisors, and we can turn those around real rapidly and provide different types of features, again, just using flex options as the only asset within the fund itself.
Steve, on that Growth 150 fund, it just intrigues me. What's the downside here? Why wouldn't everyone do this? If you can get 1.5 times to the upside, but 1-to-1 on the downside, what's the catch?
Dividends. And so with all defined outcome products, whether it's an indexed annuity, whether it's an equity-linked note, whether it's an ETF, or whether it's an M-plus fund, an investor's foregoing dividends. And that dividend is not something that they're losing. Rather, it's a currency that the fund manager is using to provide a different feature. In this case, we're using that dividend stream to provide enhanced upside capture. We're buying more flex options to provide the upside. Conversely, we might use a dividend stream to principal protect the downside in our preservation style or our buffered style of funds. And so that's one thing that any investor needs to understand. You're kind of using your dividend stream that you would have otherwise gotten as a current pay, and you're using it as a currency to do something else, in the case that you just mentioned, enhanced upside capture.
You mentioned these aren't traded on an exchange, so if an investor wants to access them, I assume go through an advisor or their broker?
Yeah, that's right. So right now, our products are primarily represented through registered investment advisors and through regional wealth firms and broker-dealers and the like. And we're about to be made available on a direct-to-consumer basis via the custodians. But by and large, most of our, you know, if I looked at through the advisor, if I looked at the individual client, they're generally represented or sold through, if you will, registered investment advisors and broker-dealers. But they're registered funds, so they're issued in $10 units. You know, they're available to any type of client. There's no pre-qualification requirements and things like that. You know, again, because it's a registered 40 Act fund and because of the disclosures of fees and holdings and so forth, it makes it kind of more of a mainstream product.
On the topic of fees, do you mind talking a little bit more about the fees associated with these UITs? I think that's always an important consideration for investors.
Yeah, the fee paradigm is good on these. I mean, we've gotten virtually no pushback in terms of the price point. In fact, people find it quite attractive. But to be more specific to your question, the UIT is not a managed fund. As I mentioned earlier, we deposit these assets on day one and essentially walk away. And because of that, we don't charge a per annum management fee. Instead, we just charge a one-time only upfront construction fee. It's called a creation and development fee. And that fee, depending on the maturity of our funds, but it tends to be about 50 basis points. And that's a one-time only upfront charge. So from a pricing perspective, you know, if it was a 2-year fund, you could annualize that to 25 basis points per annum. If it was a 3-year fund, you know, of course, it would be cheaper than that. So by and large, we found the pricing of this, I think, to be very compelling. It's going to be rich to just buying spiders outright or buying EFA outright or buying EEM, if that's, you know, emerging market ETF. But you're getting something in exchange. You're getting these enhancements, the enhanced upside that you just mentioned, or buffered downside, for instance, that I mentioned earlier.
Steve, I want to come back to this topic I alluded to earlier of defined outcome ETFs. I know you're well aware that there are these defined outcome ETFs out there, such as the ones from Innovator ETFs. And, you know, look, they've seen a lot of success so far since they first launched, which was, I believe, in August of last year. And what's interesting to me is you were actually early to this idea overall, right? M Plus Funds launched, a couple of years ago. The question I have for you is, why not go the ETF route?
Well, it's something that we would consider, and Innovator's done a tremendous job in my eyes. The UIT, though, is, and we looked at this at actually launching an ETF about 4 years ago when we first launched our first funds here. But the UIT chassis we found to be a better instrument for defined outcome payoffs. Firstly, the tax features of an M-plus fund or the tax treatment of an M-plus fund is, we think, better than any other instrument, whether it's an open-ended mutual fund or an ETF. It's just generally long-term capital gains tax treatment if they're held for more than 1 year, very simple. The second reason, and this is kind of plays right into our client base if I think about it, is our ability to customize funds. So as I mentioned earlier, we can launch an M-plus fund for about $3 million, which is kind of our break-even threshold. And we do quite a bit of customized funds for banks and registered investment advisors and the like. And we can add a lot of different unique features to it versus just, you know, what you're seeing as, you know, pretty standardized buffered products that we see in the ETF space. And so I think the flexibility of offering it against different ETFs, different market exposures, varying your buffers, varying your principal protection levels, varying your upside capture, as you mentioned in that prior fund, and then importantly, the tax treatment is kind of what drew us to the UIT chassis. And, you know, unit investment trusts, they've been around, you know, for 50 years or whatever. This isn't your father's Oldsmobile per se. This, you know, we've kind of taken that old UIT chassis, which was traditionally used for holding, you know, stock baskets and bond baskets, dogs of the Dow and things like that. And we repurposed it. We worked with the SEC to allow for us to deposit flex options into that UIT chassis, and that's what kind of got us the breakthrough earlier when we started launching funds a few years back.
No, and I think that makes a lot of sense to me. I think especially if you're looking at larger dollar accounts, the ability to create these very specific risk return profiles in have these maturities, I think that's intriguing. And of course, the potential tax benefits. But it sounds like you wouldn't rule out looking at the ETF route at some point.
No, we wouldn't. And there's, look, ETFs are just so prolific. I mean, they're ubiquitous, right? So it's an important and it's an excellent, you know, instrument that people use. I use them in my portfolio all the time, as do all of your listeners. So we certainly wouldn't rule it out. It's much more of a mainstream application. But we've been pretty pleased with the growth that we've had, the engagement that we've had. You know, I think you just said it. We're touching a little bit of a different audience. But the most important thing for us, I think, is taking this defined outcome investment strategy and trying to make it more mainstream. Again, structured notes, equity-linked notes, indexed annuities, great products. They've been around forever, but they're just not widely adopted like an ETF or like a UIT. So having a 40-Act fund vehicle was really the purpose, and it's validating. We're seeing that certainly in the ETF space, and importantly, we're seeing it with our own client base.
Okay, so on that note, what do you see as the future of this space as a whole? Whether we're talking about defined outcome ETFs or your UITs, what do you view as a longer-term opportunity here to take share from traditional structured products?
Yeah, I don't know that it's taking share from structured products, and that was definitely not a part of our thesis in building this out. Structured products in the U.S. is about a $60 billion issuance business per year, but that number hasn't changed in like a decade. What we're trying to do right now is to take the mainstream investor who invariably buys funds. They buy mutual funds, they buy ETFs and the like, and saying, here's a great new instrument that will allow you to protect downside or capture enhancements on the upside. By the way, anybody can do this on their own if they want to trade options. You don't need to buy an Innovator ETF. You don't need to buy an M-plus fund. But the simplicity of how we're packaging these to provide downside protection or enhanced upside capture is great. And that's the future of what we see developing here. We think this could be many multiples of issuance of what you see with structured notes and even with indexed annuities because of the simplicity and the mainstream nature of how ourselves and our competitors are now delivering these.
Well, Steve, we'll have to leave it there. Really interesting product. Certainly wish you continued success.
We'll definitely
have to connect again to see how everything is going. But thank you for joining me this week.
My pleasure. Thanks for having us. Really appreciate it.
That was Steve Houston, partner at M Plus Funds.